Sounds good to me.
I have started recording. Drew and I have literally just got our food, so we're going to be eating all the way through the episode probably. And Chris has just come out of the shower, I'm guessing, or a bath.
Bath, yeah,
Bath.
nice
So you're one of
bath.
those weird
So,
people that has a bath, right? Okay.
and
yeah,
still using a towel. Let's
still
name and
using a
shame the
towel.
audience.
Yeah, right.
Actually,
Actually,
where we discussed that, or was that? I can't even remember. I assume it was there.
where you just get out of the
Oh,
shower and put clothes on.
yeah.
That's insane.
I mean,
I'm
I have a
too
little shake
hairy.
like
I'm
an
really
animal.
hairy. I would be soaking.
Yeah.
I'm very hairy from the waist down.
Good to know.
I'm wearing trousers all the time.
I'm not particularly hairy, but I do use two towels to dry, one for the hair and one for everything else.
I mean, you do have a lot of hair. That is, yeah, that's
That's,
fair.
it's getting pretty long now. I mean, you
But then,
can't see with the yesterday's.
give yourself a little shake and then air dry for a bit and then put your clothes on and it's great. We're
I mean,
warm.
I generally air dry my hair, because I the thing is, it's like, am I? Oh, I'm going out of focus. Hang on. But I generally air dry my hair. Hang on one second. Here we go. But because, like, if I use the hairdryer every time, it would just cost too much. It's quite expensive on the electric bill. So,
So anyway, this is the Expanse podcast, believe it or not.
oh, actually, I'll tell you what, right? I wanted to say this at the earliest opportunity because I'm quite chuffed with this, right? So I was out for my walk in the woods and I found an old discarded coat that I picked up, right?
Sorry, you discarded what?
Coat, like
Oh,
a
coat.
like like a
Nice.
proper like a like a relatively expensive winter coat, and someone had just like obviously discarded it,
Yeah.
and I and it was like it was clearly it was just it was like kind of soaked through, so it was like it'd been left there for a few
Been
days. It
for a
wasn't
while,
just,
yeah.
and I took it home and I stuck it in the washing machine. I did like a special hygiene wash just to make sure there were no
Yeah.
raccoons in it or anything. And I saw why it had been discarded. Like there were some tears on it.
Okay.
So you could sort of see that like someone had been walking through the forest and then like a branch had caught their pocket and sort of torn it open. But I totally
I've got
reckon
a
I could
dog that
fix
does
that.
that for me. Rips my
Yeah.
pockets.
Oh, it could have been, yeah. Like a dog could have, yeah. But it had a couple of tears in it. I think are relatively easy to fix. I because it's like a waterproof jacket. I don't know if I'm gonna. I don't. I think sewing it is a bit like I think like maybe hot glue or.
Well, what I used, because hot glue will probably come off. I used stuff that's meant for sealing up boats, so it dries like rubbery stuff and it's flexible.
Oh yeah.
That's what I used as
Okay.
my
Hot glue
waterproof.
might just melt. Could melt the
Melt.
coat a bit.
Yeah, you can melt a coat a bit, but I mean, we've got a box of glue in this house of different, various different types of glues. So I'll have a look at what we've
Oh
got.
yeah, I've
And
got all sorts of stuff too,
glues are the best thing in the
from
world.
technical
Like,
stuff and crafting stuff and all sorts.
yeah, glues can save your life. They really can.
Do you enjoy? This might just be me. Do you enjoy super gluing your fingers together?
No,
Oh, I would.
not
If there's
not for
super
any.
glue
No,
around,
I don't. I know what you
I will
mean,
super glue all my
but I
fingers
don't like
together.
the feeling of it, like the
Oh
extra,
no, I
like the
love it.
layer
Yeah,
on
no,
the.
that's right. No, I love that. Yeah.
No, I do use what do you call it? Is it makeup nail varnish remover? When
Yeah.
I get that stuck on my hands, that seems to like
No, I leave it
an
because I love
acetone or something, is it?
something like that, or alcohol. I don't know what it is. Some kind of, but it can get. I don't even know if it's good for me. Probably not really. But then super glue
Nail varnish
nowadays.
is not acetate, acetone. I think it's acetone. If you get
Yeah, that's what I'm
that
saying,
very active
acetone, yeah.
kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays, I do tend to be better at wearing gloves and things like that when I'm mucking around with glue, just because I do get it on my hands a lot. I think maybe I'm not. I don't know. Like, just because, like, yeah, like stuff like, yeah, like that. Like, it's just like, yeah, it just seems to make a lot of sense.
What's the mentality though? I mean, it's good for you that they did, but what's the mentality of, oh, my coat's torn, I'll just fucking leave it here?
People with
Maybe they
too
just
much
lost their.
money.
Yeah, because it's like an expensive coat as well. That's the thing. Like,
No,
it's not going to look pristine when I'm done with it, but it's good
no.
enough.
It's a shame, yeah.
Yeah, like
I
especially
mean,
if I'm just.
that's just littering a natural area. That's, I
I
mean,
did. I
littering,
did.
like littering in a city street that's already filthy. Like, I'm not condoning it, but like, whatever. But like littering in the countryside is.
it's there's worse. something different about it. Yeah. Because like cities have already been I don't want to say like sullied by mankind, I guess.
It's all fucking mess anyway, so.
Well, they do like picks and stuff, you know, like they don't always have people to. Some cities have people picking up rubbish.
Yeah.
The cleaning operations.
It's usually volunteers, you know? Though, now these days. They don't pay anybody for it anymore.
Well, I mean, I think Cardiff City Centre does, but then if you see what the amount of vomiting that happens on a weekend in Cardiff, you know, I think. But no, so I'm pretty chuffed with it. So that's a nice little fixy-uppy project for me today. I did feel at the time the person who I was walking with, like, did possibly suggest, like, oh, it's not something that someone's just left here because they were too hot, gone for a walk, and they're going to come back.
Yeah. Or they're not.
Not if it was soaked through. No.
It was soaked through, and like it had some pretty noticeable tears in it. So. But a lot of the tears were through the pocket seams and stuff like that. So I think a lot of the damage is relatively cosmetic as well. So
what we need to do now, just for a bit of like manufactured synchronicity, is obviously we can't do it ourselves, but get somebody to leave like a pure and clean jumpsuit. You'd be like, that's weird.
Nice way to bring it back around to the topic there.
Very good, yeah. I actually have a jumpsuit, like a real, like...
You really?
Yeah. I bought it because I was going to do a lot of painting. Well, I did do a lot of painting in the end, and I thought, like, I don't know, it just made a lot of sense to me to have just one thing that I can put on, just slam it on, do a bit of painting, take it off, type of thing. And they're really good. Like, I do recommend them. They're not that expensive.
Because when I was younger, I worked on farms a lot, and I witnessed like the sort of a cultural break where the older farmers, like the boomer age farmers, they would wear like tweed. Basically, like hard wearing fabrics, and then the young generation, it was just overalls, just like the navy blue overalls. That's like the farmer uniform, still with the flat cap. But yeah,
nowadays it's all t-shirt and shorts and stuff. They just wear like
t-shirt, jeans, and a baseball cap. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I don't think I've seen farmers in tweed at shows. So I think there's like they dressed up for the shows.
But it's more of it's an appeal to nostalgia, isn't it? Rather than something that one would naturally.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that it commands a little bit of respect, and
you look at it.
Okay.
I did at a cattle auction. I very almost bought a herd of sheep.
What did you scratch your nose during the auction or something?
Well, there was a cattle market in the town where my high school was, and you know sometimes we'd go and get like fish and chips and just sit in it was somewhere to sit down in the cattle market and watch the season. I just gestured to my friend. And the dude, he pointed at me like, but thankfully somebody else.
Oh, nice. we used to have a cattle market in town, but me and my friends just used to light fires in there.
a derelict one.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. It might not have been. It just might not.
I actually went up to one of the farmers and I was just like, could I buy a single lamb? And he was like, yeah, I'll sell you a lamb. And I was like, how much would a single lamb be? And he was like, it was something like 15 quid. And I was very tempted to buy a lamb. They're so cute.
Yeah, but they get bigger.
They get bigger quick.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can make your own jumpers.
or meal.
Or stew.
or both.
But one then the other.
Mm. I mean, do you really think after you've raised a lamb, you could kill it and eat it?
I would... Probably not, actually. Probably not. I had enough. I fished for a couple of years as a kid. And I would catch trout and I would, you kill them, put them on a fire, eat them. Like, amazing. But, like, I struggled. Clubbing the fish to death was an ordeal for me. I think there's a hypocrisy to that. If I'm willing to go and buy it when somebody else has done it, but not willing to.
I don't think that, and I'm the vegan. I think that it's just a sensibilities thing. You'll get used to
it. It is, but there's an alienation from the realities of what I'm actually doing. I think when not that everybody should be willing to kill, because doing violence to an animal is a horrible thing. But
so
yeah,
The Expanse. Okay, Grand Theft Nauvoo. They're going to steal the Nivea. Right. So what they're going
to
do...
Well, you've gone right to the end of the episode then.
Well, okay, I was thinking about this just before we were coming on. We should really start each of these episodes with the most interesting part of the episode, right?
Yeah. I like the way that we got...
There's a lot of things that are interesting in this episode.
There are. And also, this episode was definitely better on the second watch. When I was settling down and watching it for the first time, I thought, oh, this is a lot of talking. And then I watched it a second time when I was paying a bit more attention to the actual what they were saying, what it means.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, there's a lot of things that hook into a lot of other things.
Yeah.
And that's where
a lot of things have consequences.
Mm. And because I thought when Miller was going into the Mormon church, I was like, like
I love the Miller's conversion to Mormonism fake out.
Yeah. It's like
first time through it had me. It's like, oh my fucking, like,
that, well, because he was getting all spiritual, and it's like the only religion that was around, wasn't it?
Yeah, and also he had a reason to seek some kind of because...
He still sees Julie. He saw her in the mirror and stuff.
Mm, actually, I've got a thought on that one. But
I mean, that hooks into my grand theory as well.
Do you think that Julie Mao in that particular scene... She was like happy,
or her expression is pleased. She's pleased.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it was a positive expression, and because it was when Miller was in the mirror and he was shaving the sides of his head, which I'm taking to mean that's a more belter look, isn't it?
Well, there's like, a bit in that scene. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think it's more belter look. There's a bit in that scene where, because he's with Diogo, right?
Yeah.
And towards the end of that scene where Diogo just walks up to him and they look in the mirror together and Diogo goes, belter loader.
Yeah,
and that's not quite how it happens.
Miller stands up straight.
Yeah, he does. But before that, he'd been talking about something and saying, blah, 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 us. And Diogo, Diogo says, what do you mean us? And he says, belters, you know. So
there's
a bit more to it. But yeah.
When somebody that Miller recognizes as like a true belter, called a belter. Like he looks so. His facial expression doesn't really change, but he just looks. He looks pleased and proud. And
his bearing changes.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a little bit of like, because I think the why he killed Dresden now, to me, like he sort of talks a lot about it, but in reality, I think this hooks back to what Dawes was saying about if Julie Mao was alive now, she'd spit in your face. And it's like he killed Dresden almost because that's what Julie Mao would do.
Yeah.
Like he's doing it like almost for her approval. And then this is the scene where she kind of gives the approval.
Yeah.
I can see that playing out. Yeah. But also he does justify it somewhat to the others. But you know, it's what Drew was saying about basically these people are monsters anyway. You know, the scientists that shouldn't be doing these things.
Sorry, Drew.
This is the episode where he says the line, "I didn't kill him because he wasn't making sense." That's this episode.
He killed him because he was making sense.
Make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So Miller shaves the sides of his head. So he's like
with the space hair clippers.
Space hair clippers, yeah, which is great. I'd love those because you can. I assume it catches the hair.
Oh, I don't know that.
No, it was flopping around like a normal set of clippers.
Oh, that's disappointing.
It was going back in his head. That's all.
Hundreds of years, and they haven't. Like, we can do it. Lawnmowers. Lawnmowers catch.
What I found interesting about this scene, I like that in the scene, like when he's shaving, he's using a cutthroat razor that doesn't seem to be a space cutthroat razor. It's just a cutthroat razor.
Yeah.
And then he uses space hair. Well, I mean, it's just an LED in normal clippers, but, you know, space hair clippers.
Yeah, I can imagine belters liking straight razors because they're cheaper, I'd imagine, right? And also, you know,
use them anywhere.
Yeah, you can use them anywhere. But also, like, I mean, they're not going to have the fucking Gillette 4-in-1 thingy things. Because, like, I'm assuming that, like, with Life on Series, for example, or any place on the belt, you've got to be really careful about your waste. Like, you've got to reuse everything as much as possible.
It's going to be, for time, there's going to be shortage of finished goods that you're, you know, Whereas a straight copper razor, if it's, as long as you've got a sharpening stone, you know.
Yep.
You're good for life, yeah. And they've probably got a lot of rocks. They could probably, you know. So this episode is basically Miller becoming a true belter because everyone's pissed off with him except for the belters.
Yeah.
To whom he's basically a bit of a hero.
During the mission, they were calling him the boss man, and, you know, there was they all warmed up to him, and he took charge.
And there's a nice bit with him and Naomi where she's like, she gets it. Like, she absolutely
gets it. I can't remember how I felt. Like, when I watched it for the first time, like, sitting back, I'm very much like, I didn't have one thought one way or the other. But when I rewatched it, because I decidedly don't have one, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't even process, I just enjoy it
just take it in as it comes, sort of thing.
But then, like, the second time around, it was so obvious what it was like. It was the, you know, he was like, God, he's riding this guy's dick just way too hard for Miller. Like, it was just so out of character for him to sort of turn around like that. And of course, and then he's like, the big giveaway is when he's talking about to the Mormon guy and he's saying, you know, tell me about the journey. And then he starts talking about his journey.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, the Naboo. Oh,
the
big journey. And it's like, oh, right, okay. Mm. Because
on that subject, this is the episode where you got all details that Drew was talking about a few episodes ago. This is where you get all that revealed. They show you the sort of visualization of the inside. Yeah. And all that.
It does look fucking cool. Just like acres of farmland, and it looks lovely.
And it's so it's like inertia. Then is it? Does it? It twists through once it gets up to speed. He says it starts.
It rotates about a core. Yeah.
That's kind of, so, and then it just stays rotating for hundreds of years or whatever.
Powered, it would need to be powered still, but yeah, it would, yeah,
yeah. But so the thing is with the Naboo is, it's going to have the means to blow asteroids up because if you're traveling for super long distances, presumably you're going to need to. You're going to be traveling in a straight line. It's a big thing. Takes a lot of energy to move. So it's just easier to blast through most obstacles, right? So you're going to have a big gun on the front.
Yeah. I would assume it's the same kind of thing we saw on that station where they literally said it's an anti-asteroid cannon.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to get rid of asteroids. So, and I'm assuming that an anti-asteroid cannon is a big fucking cannon, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like it's the almost, would you say, the biggest cannon? So big that it wouldn't even be useful in war, right?
Well, that's what you said. It wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt the Rocinante because it's kind of a scattergun type thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, unless you've got it lined up directly in your sights, which I'm imagining is going to be somewhat difficult in a dogfight kind of scenario. Then yeah, but it's more of a construction apparatus rather than a weapon.
Before we move on to other things, can we finally talk about Amos, because we kind of get the whole picture with Amos, not the reasons, but the, and I've been wanting to say this from, so the way I'd put it, without, you know, trying to get too diagnostical, yeah, but like in a broad cultural understanding, so Amos is basically a sociopath. He lacks empathy, he doesn't have a moral compass, but he's also a good person, and he knows that he doesn't have a moral compass, so he attaches himself to somebody who he trusts to be good and who can make the moral decisions for him. And so he's a good person without a moral compass. And I think that's so fucking interesting.
It was interesting to hear his opinion of Holden as well.
Oh, yeah.
When he was talking to Miller about Holden. And how Miller and Amos are similar, but Holden is like, much more righteous. I think he's just more righteous than he can ever be, or something like that.
Yeah.
That's so.
So when Amos is doing violence, it's like, because he clearly sees in that scientist that they capture, he sees a reflection of himself, and he talks about when the prisoner beat the other prisoner to death, he's like, you just saw a problem and you solved it. And that when Amos is doing violence, he's completely detached from
it. Yeah, he's not feeling He's not angry or anything. He's
It's just
a switch because... that changes his mood, if you like.
And then the bit when they're describing how they basically deleted empathy from these people using a magnet, which is cool. There's a bit where Amos
asks if there's a cure.
Is it reversible? Yeah. It's kind of like, oh.
His daughter, like, it's heartbreaking that bit because he, yeah. I mean, again, earlier Naomi mentions Pinocchio. Mm. Like, yeah, he's just like, he wants to be a real boy kind of thing. And he's aware that there's something missing in him, you know, in inverted commas. I love that as a character idea, like somebody without a moral compass. I mean, it's not something I've never seen before, but like I think it's done. Like the acting just is so fucking perfect when you realise what's going on with Amos.
Yeah, it's like you said. Well, like you said in the podcast for the show, out of all the actors that came in, only two of them got Amos.
Yeah,
it was him and the guy who played Kenzo was the other one.
Oh, Elias Tivaldi or whatever.
Yeah, my understanding is that that kind of neurological disorder is often the result of trauma, like trauma in your childhood, and we've had hints of that already.
Yeah, yeah. I know someone like that actually. He sleeps around a lot. Usually with married women, but he got in trouble once because he was hooking up with the wife of a lawyer. And the lawyer found out and scared the shit out of him with some letters. I don't know if he could have done anything in a legal sense of the term, but he certainly... I think
promiscuity is more often associated with...
depression.
Like, neither of these are diagnoses anymore, I think, but with being a psychopath rather than being a sociopath. Psychopaths are good at... You know, what's that film that everybody references with the American Psycho? Where he's like, he's very charismatic, it's absolute wank, but people like, but he's, you know, very charismatic, very good at manipulating people, and which is not Amos is the opposite of that.
Well, it's like the original Hannibal Lecter, Brian Cox. His one is perfect, he's just so matter of fact about things, and very personable, and
I was curious as to know, like, so it seems to me, could be wrong, that they're setting up this scientist to be, you know, the key to understanding the proto-molecule. Like,
He's definitely
it's all they've got, isn't it?
I mean, it's all they've got, and I'm kind of curious to, like, how much would he know? Because he says, like, you know, you've got to talk to Dresden if you need more, and then eventually he then says... if you get me the data, I can probably decipher it for you. Or?
I think what's going on there is like he's, you know, he's got probably the same qualifications that Dresden had. He's just junior to him, so he'd probably be capable of stepping up and, you know, taking over the you know, fulfilling Dresden's role. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, presumably, like if Dresden's motivation was morbid scientific curiosity, then he would have some sort of redundancy, like there would be something in play that it's not just all about him, that his juniors
seemed to think it was, but also he would also try to justify it all by saying it was for the greater good as well. But that's, you know, that's being used a lot of times.
Maybe true, like that, maybe, you know, if this thing was sent as a weapon, then learning about it and sacrificing a few million people to save billions is potentially a valid thing, but I think it's doing it non-consensually. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And picking on the poorest people in the system.
I mean, that was I'm assuming a political choice on the basis that it would just receive the least amount of pushback.
Basically, also, just you know, we do literally value the people who are further away and poorer. We value them less.
Yeah,
we just do.
And also. You know, I don't know how much this goes into it, but they say that Eros used to be the jewel of the crown, or jewel of the belt, and now it wasn't. So it's like it's fallen, and that can, you know, that kind of like ties into it a little bit, maybe that it's like they are their own worst enemy. They are like victim blaming, not, you know, like a,
What would happen if if the place was, you know, the jewel of the belt or whatever at one point, and then things changed, all the people with the money would just scarp over the money. They take all the resources they can, you know, and they just leave everybody poor and resourceless and stuff. And that's, so it's, you know,
it's Stoke-on-Trent or Detroit or any post-industrial, you're Glasgow to an extent.
They couldn't run away.
One of the things, okay, so this episode was called is called Static. And so we see a lot of references to the sound coming from Eros, right? So Diogo talks about how there's this feed coming off of Eros, and this OPA pirate person is remixing it into the, is it like the theme of the episode, that like beats that we
hear?
I reckon so,
and that's and then of course
also maybe hearing the guy's brain as well,
and the thing that's coming through the phone. So when they're showing the phone to the phone, when they're showing the little the phone device to the scientist.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
And the communicating thing.
Hamish and I both went to like phone call.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Phone? I was like smartphone.
I don't know what else to call them, really.
No, it's the right word. No, it's the right word.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, communicator, phone.
Phone, and it's bringing the stream over from straight from Eros. So,
but it's a radio signal, though, isn't it?
It's a radio signal,
Or there's some or is there some audio? No, it's radio. It's a radio signal with this audio embedded in it.
So we're learning that what's happening on Eros is interesting. He says it's counting down. Oh no, it's building something. That's what he's kind
that's
of deciphering.
Yeah, that's what they say.
He ends on counting down, though. He says it's like a clock. It's, you know.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Oh no, it's counting down," which is very Independence Day.
And then he says something about building something.
Yeah.
So
well, they also talk a lot.
He also got, just I'm gonna say this neutrally without, you know, leaning one way or the other. But he does say something that lends credence to your idea that like people might not necessarily be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that as well. Talks about things. He talks about repurposing.
Stuff.
So I get from that they can maybe take a human apart, which would kill the human, but they can still extract and use. You know, so they could. I get the feeling that like the well, if you just think about back to when Holden was on the Anubis, there's a sort of tentacly appendage comes out to try and grab him. So obviously they've learned about, you know, hands or arms at the very least or whatever. So I get the feeling that, and the fact that they've got sound coming across radio waves thing as well, also suggests that they can get something from the brains. And he also mentions when the scientists, I forgot his name. I'll look it up in a minute when I've finished tidying up here. He mentions that there's a structure to it all, and no matter what happens around it, whether it's the extrusions that come out of people or the things that go on the surface of stuff, whatever, he says they take organic things, and they're sort of fluid and maneuverable, but there's always like a crystal at the heart of it. I'm not sure if he meant as a individual thing or if he means like cellular level. I never quite caught that off this episode, but he does mention all that in detail.
Yeah,
he says that the crystal, he calls it like the seed crystal,
is
disconnected. It's disconnected from the rest. He says,
okay,
or like is physically it? Disconnected. I think.
I'd be interested to know if this thing it was building, because could it be terraforming Eros? Because it's like you talk about repurposing, building something. Are they going to go back to Eros and then realize that they've like terraformed it in the way that Mars could only dream of? Now,
I like that.
I didn't know.
Like, it's like I'm just trying to think of something out of pocket that they're going to discover about Eros, unless they lift the Naboo and just bomb it before we get to see anything, which would be a shame because, like, because that's where they leave it, right? Miller's like, look, let's nick it, let's just steal it. I mean, I don't even know if he's talking about ramming it,
isn't he? I don't know what I know. You were looking at cannons and stuff in your things earlier, but he's talking about hitting it with the Naboo as a weapon.
Yeah, they're going to crash the Naboo into
that's
it,
and like that's they, the that's the theory.
Divert it a bit.
Wow,
okay. that's next episode where they get the details.
I love that scene, that scene at the end where Fred Johnson's like, what could we possibly use to do that?
I knew that was going to get lifted. We all saw it coming, didn't we?
Yeah, you were always talking about them stealing the Naboo. Yeah.
I'm right fucking on that, like, oh, really early. Like, yeah.
Now, the clue that you gave me is that the Mormons are in some ways the comic relief faction, as it were.
Yeah, the one that nobody minds if they get fucked over, really.
Yeah, that's like, oh, they're going to steal the Naboo. Obviously, like, unless the only other reason I was thinking that they could even have that is just as a fun little side story that doesn't really interact with the plot, just them. And then going far away.
I thought that's where it was going to go. Yeah, I thought we'd get occasional updates about what's going on the Naboo, and at some point maybe it would link into the main story. But I do like the bit. So when they're... Oh, no. That's next. I did watch ahead because it's very fucking hot. How hard was it for you to not? Was that one of the hot...
Yeah, kind of, yeah, because this episode was all build-up. Miller really did actually mohawk it up.
Looks good. Looks really good.
Yeah. I don't know how interesting it is. Like, there feels like there's some beach episode stuff, as they say in the anime world.
What's that mean?
it's just where it's a beach episode, usually set on a beach, but not always, as I understand it. It is an episode where there's not much plot. But it's all character, like, interaction.
I have encountered that in hentai games. That's really my only contact with anime is hentai games.
Yeah, it's sometimes it comes, I think, it comes from the old days of television where they didn't know how long how many slots on TV they'd have a series for. So they would have a couple of filler episodes that they could take out so that they could, you know, have a little bit of grace depending on, you know, if the queen dies or something like that, you know. It's like they had it with Doctor Who episodes. Every now and then they'll find like a Doctor Who episode that was like never aired. Like, they'll just find a can and go, oh, this is a just in case Doctor Who episode. Doctor Who goes to the beach. It's like,
we do get last episode, you said that's the closest we had to a montage, and then this episode we get a literal montage.
Yeah, which is interesting because, like, the thing is about, like, I have a love-hate relationship with a lot of soundtracks and a lot of things. More so with games than with films.
Yeah.
Where sometimes with a game, it just sounds like they're putting music on in the background, almost like a car radio or something. Just to fill the noise. And a lot of the time, at least me and you, Drew, I don't know about Hamish, we turn the music on a lot of games off.
I default to turning music off. I open a game, I turn the music off, yeah.
I mean, I usually turn it down... Because some games, the music is context for things happening. Eh?
Very few. Although, I mean, you are a person who likes music.
I like music a lot. Yeah. But also, I could name two games off the top of my head that have that. It's obviously one we know very well, Left 4 Dead, has that.
Yeah.
But also Alien Isolation, the soundtrack changes with the mood of things. It's very, very well done.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I mean those, or particularly with Alien Isolation, it feels like it's an instance where it works and is serving a purpose.
Yeah.
That's
a well done version of it.
As much as I like the soundtracks to Morrowind and Oblivion, they are good musics in their own right. They do make it feel like a computer game because you're walking along, and then suddenly action music.
third. Like it's like it goes a dum ba dum ba dum, like you're in a battle and you look around and there's a little bug chasing you. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. With the alien one, I have a very. I agree and disagree a lot of the time about how cinematic I want a game to be, and some people some people and some developers and publishers seem to think that it's slamming certain things in your face makes it cinematic, like film grain as an effect on I don't know what graphics card introduced that shit, but it's terrible. It's like no, but the other one is, I remember somebody tried to argue with me that third person, you know, the console bollocks, something should perfectly be a first person adventure game, like Resident Evil or something like that. There's just no reason for third person. And the one that annoys me most is Dead Space.
Yes,
because not only is it third person for no reason. And what could perfectly well be a first person game. Also, the character's head is like almost always there because that's where the HUD is. It's like just put a fucking HUD in.
I had the same reaction to Dead Space at the time, and I was saying like, why does it need to be third person? Like, and their argument was, well, his health bar's on his back, so it needs to be third person. But no, the reason I assume you know this.
But the other problem is, of course, that as soon as you get in like a corner or near a door frame or something, suddenly the screen is filled by your character and you can't see anything. And you can only look round one way. You can't look round the other way depending on whether the character's left or right hand. But if you've got a technical explanation, tell me. Because the first one I remember doing it, and the one that put me right off it was fucking Tomb Raider in 1994 or whatever it was. Yeah, well, that was to show off.
I enjoy Tomb Raider.
Text and bombs or whatever.
The reason console games are third person is because usually you play a console, you know, on a sofa with a TV, so you're further back on the screen, so you have to have a narrower FOV, and so to have a sense of where you are, third person because of the narrower FOV, third person works better than first person. But the problem is, then they port it to PC, they don't widen the FOV. And then it's horrible. In case it's not obvious, a screen is essentially a window, and the closer you are to it, the wider you can see.
Yep, exactly.
That's it.
It's like where you're looking. If you think of a camera's cone of view, it's like you're suddenly further up in it instead of at the back of it.
Want to be sitting. You want to be sitting at the pivot point of where
would be if it were a
window. Exactly. Yeah. You want to be the camera. You want your camera to be your head, sort of.
But game cinematic. I do some games that do cinematic, whatever aesthetic. Well, I enjoy that, but I do find it a little bit sad that cinematic is the default to aim for with a game. It should have its own language, and the good games do have their own language. Yeah.
Well, Half-Life 2 is good at that.
Like a film shouldn't be trying to mimic a novel. It's its own thing, and it needs to find its own.
But there's far too many games, or so-called games, that are just stories. No, I'm not saying stories bad in games. I get that, but if it's so much story and hardly any gameplay, what's the point of making it a game?
What I always say is, in a game, I'm interested in the story I'm telling through the mechanics of the game.
Exactly, you're the person in the game. Story. Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to be told. And like BioWare and Black Isle and all those, like, they're the worst for this. They just want you to sit down, shut up, don't stop touching things. I want to tell you a story.
Yeah. That's what they got me, they being viewers, got me to play the new Tomb Raider games, the first two of the three. And they're fucking awful. It's basically a film with a few quick time events in it.
Yep. They're horrible.
It's pointless. And then there's the sort of, you can wander around here a bit, but there's nothing to do. You've still got to go to the set point.
It's like you say, it's a film with quick time events and then a lot of pointless fucking crafting and collecting.
Yeah.
I agree with you about the third person thing, but the original Tomb Raider games, they were explorative, like puzzle games. They were a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then sort of conversely to that, right, where we had, because of course we're all playing it now, Deus Ex, right? There was a great example that with the storytelling, you're telling your own story, is actually through that was made like levels, like a separate story made using like Deus Ex engine, all that kind of stuff. It's called Red Sun 2020, I think it is, and you escape from a facility similar to when you escape from the MJ-12, and you're like scrabbling around for whatever you can find to help your escape. And like that feels infinitely more real and like immersive,
yeah,
than anything like cinematic in that regard.
Yeah, but it's hard to make. It takes more effort to make, which is why we see so little of it. You know, that was really that, like Deus Ex. I mean, Deus Ex meant it has its story to tell you, but you tell your story within that.
That's what it works so well, doesn't it? You still feel like you've got agency within the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like, you're following that path or that path, and that's all you can do. You know, you've still got a lot to do.
Yeah, but so with
Morrowind, with the pinnacle of that, really.
Yeah, totally. But with the music in the montage here, it is the music is part of the story,
and exactly. it's the music from the it's the disco music, isn't it? Where they're dancing or whatever.
I remember when I watched the first Guardians of the...
I will be back right in a second. It's pee time because he's had some food.
Oh, bless him. All right. Well, I remember when I saw the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the Marvel thing.
Yeah.
And part of the gimmick of that movie is the main character, he likes cassette tapes and listening to old music.
Yeah,
and he's I kind of got almost a little bit offended that it's like, so you don't think like this film doesn't stand up on its own, so you're just throwing some nostalgia bits for the parents or something.
Yeah, they were good tracks. They were well chosen tracks. It's good. It's good music, and it works, which is the problem. But it's lazy, and it's
Yeah. So it's just like, oh, we don't, because the music has no bearing on the story other than the shoehorned bits, you know. And it's like, you're not making us like we only like the bit of the film because you've put the music in that you like.
Imagine going to a screening and, you know, it's like, what do you think of this film? And it's like, it's all right. And then just put a cool song on and go, what do you think of it now?
Yeah, exactly.
That
yeah, and it's like I always kind of think,
you know, here's a cheeseburger to eat while you're watching the movie. Is it better now?
Yeah, it's basically that. And with this episode, the music itself had it, like, and I think they should always do this whenever they're putting music into things, is that it should be relevant to the world that it's in. So this montage is
I think the word is diegetic, right? When the music is of the world and you're just like, because there is some music playing in the nightclub as opposed to a soundtrack.
Yeah totally. And to be honest, even like in games, like that's a good way of doing it, like the Alien Isolation, there's a point with, there's a game called Neon Struct, which is a like a modern indie sort of recreation of like old school stealth games like Thief and Deus Ex, and the music in the game, okay, so the soundtrack was by a band called The Home Conversions. I think they're Canadian. But what really does make it immersive is that it's not a permanent part of the soundtrack, but when you're in hub areas, you'll hear that soundtrack on the radios.
Yeah.
And that is kind of just like nice. That's a nice way of doing it. You know, it's you want to, you know, if you want a bit of noise because there's no dialogue in the game or something like that.
Yeah. I think Valve are very good at music in games. In their, you know, in Portal, Half-Life,
and backgrounds, you know, soundscapes as well.
They use it as motifs, but like, yeah, it's, there's never just music playing in the background. It signifies something.
I think.
Did anybody else get a sort of sapphic feel from the Kamina and Naomi?
That's something that's a little disappointing because. I don't think this is spoilery. I mean, jump in if you think it is. But like, they explicitly refer to them having a romantic relationship later on in the show. But unlike with Holden, they never show it, and that seems a little bit cowardly.
Yeah. But by that time, Naomi's with Holden, though. She seems to be.
No, she is. But I think they got some shit for that. And later on, they have a far more gender and sexuality diverse characters later on, which I think is to make up for doing that. Yeah.
But that part was a little bit like the beach episode-y. Like, I,
What I like about that montage is it's showing how each of the characters deals with the trauma that they've just been through.
Yeah, it's showing what they're doing in their downtime after the events.
Alex is, you know, reliving. He's going, I can't be responsible for these deaths. I've got to do better next time. Naomi's just like, I need to let loose and, you know, get rid of all this emotion. She plays, you know, she plays hand squash with Kamina.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Amos interrogates a prisoner.
He goes to the bar and drinks a Miller.
He recognizes that he understands this prisoner, how this prisoner works. Now, I like that because Amos is, you wouldn't necessarily think it all the time, but he's very intelligent and he's very actually emotionally intelligent. Despite empathy or whatever, you know, a moral compass, however you want to phrase it. He doesn't have that, but he's very emotionally intelligent. He's very kind. He's very perceptive.
He doesn't seem to have his own emotional content on the surface of it all, but he understands other people's. It's not like he's autistic or something. It's not like he's not reading the signals because he reads Holden quite well. Although there is a hint of that. In fact, I think it's the next episode where there's a very specific thing in that. I can't remember if it's... No, it may be the episode after. It's one of the downtimey bits. I'm not going to spoil it because I'll...
I mean, he is in a lot of ways. He's sort of the equivalent of, you know, Spock in the original series.
I get what you're saying, yeah.
The autistic people did identify with because they felt alienated from this emotional world. And Amos is a more sort of modern interpretation of that idea, I think, to an extent.
That makes a lot more sense. Also, is this not the most Mormon looking guy you've ever seen? That is perfect casting.
Mm.
Perfect casting.
We get all the Mormons. You kind of feel bad because all the Mormons come across as quite lovely.
Yeah, they come across as really nice people. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they're the butt of everything. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's. I am kind of curious, and I've never really known that. Why do Mormons always wear the black suit and tie, Blues Brothers outfit?
I don't know.
It seems to be really universal, and they've picked it up here because this is like the suit and tie, that style of suit and tie. Sorry, my scarf is in the way. It seems to be picking that up. Now that's quite a modern suit design. I don't know how. Is it? I don't know.
That's a present day suit as opposed to the more space.
A lot of them have got space suits. So if you watch if you watch the UN assembly people, like the non-military ones, have got kind of like there's very much a nod to the aliens. You know the scene near the beginning of Aliens where she's in the whatever it's called, the judicial hearing or whatever it is. There's like they've all got these sort of collarless suits and shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of that in the UN assemblies when you see them.
Whenever I've been forced to wear a suit in real life, I've gone with I go with black suit, white shirt, black tie. I think that for me that's where a suit looks the best in that combination to me.
It's not a bad look, although it looks like this guy looks like a Mormon. Like I couldn't give you a more Mormon looking Mormon, right?
Yeah.
Like he's got like the Mormon glow, you know, like.
Yeah.
And apparently that
he has the kind of cleanliness that a baby has.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I can see that now. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's fucking! I don't know why that rings so true. Oh my god. his eyes, they're so dead. But like,
Space, carry on.
Yeah. All right,
so this suit is in the universe. This would be a very old traditional dress.
Yes,
right?
That's right. Yeah. Whereas now, at the moment, it's kind of a modernish looking.
Yeah, I don't know how modern the modern suit is. Like, they were wearing that. This is a very, like. During, say, Victorian times, whilst there were similar kind of suits, they weren't that, like, clean and pristine.
No, that's more of a late 20th century, I'd say.
Yeah. So I don't entirely know what the history of the Mormon suit is, but I kind of... Right, what else? Let's see. Miller was, see, the thing is, right, and I don't know if this was a bait and switch. Miller was fiddling with the prayer beads, not the prayer beads. What's the thing? His prayer beads.
Julie's necklace thing, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. Which to me sort of signals a little bit of sincerity, but.
Well, I don't think he's insincere. I think he's exploring where he is and how he's feeling about things, and that sort of spiritual thing that he's had over the whole Julie relationship, if you want to call it that. He's got that, and I think that's real. I think that's what's going on in him. But I think his journey is more about like being a belter than anything like God related. So yeah. I think, although he's not becoming a Mormon, as it were, I think he is still going through the same
process. Yeah,
same process, but you know, he that's just a sort of surrogate. It's like he's swimming in the water, and this is just the bath that, you know, this is just the swimming pool that happens to be there. The water is still his water, and I don't know if that makes any sense.
But... I get you. Like his awakening is as a belter, not as a Mormon.
But the sort of there's a word I'm looking for. I'm grappling for a word. He's the sort of you know, the sort of accoutrement of it all is there for him to sort of lean on. You know, like if you go, even if you're not very religious, but you go into a church, you've got, you know, it's got a certain look and a feel. Yeah. You know, and there's certain types of furniture, like pews and things like that. And there's like,
oh my God, pews are so nasty to sit on.
Yeah. But, you know, there's all these things there that are part of the, they're not religious in and of themselves, but they are part of it all. So you feel like if you're in a church, you feel like you're in a church, no matter how religious or not you are. It's a church. It's a very specific type of building. And I think it's maybe not physically that, but it's kind of similar in the sort of emotional thing. You know, the sign that's hanging up outside. You know, there's all these little, not religious triggers. Things in themselves, but they're sort of emotional and... you know, it's like the advertising. You know, it's the way they hook people in is by saying, you know, are you lost or whatever. You know, it's the sort of thing.
Yeah, it's vibes. They're manufacturing vibes.
Yes, there you go, you young person.
Now, it's Catholicism. I mean, Catholicism. You've got the gold. You've got the paintings. You've got the decoration. You've got, you know, the priest is literally dressed as a fucking wizard. You know, with a pointed robe and it's to make it feel like. The normal rules don't apply here. This is a magical place where the rules kind of thing to make you feel spiritual.
Yeah.
And I think that's important that he does this. I think it's important that he does this stuff here and he doesn't just bump into the home. You know, he doesn't just bump into the Mormon by the sign or out in the docks or something. He goes to their church or meeting room or whatever it is he goes to and does that little. You know, he has his thought process and his realizations of what he could do with the ship and everything, all there. And I think that's important. I don't, you know, it wouldn't have worked the same if he'd just been sitting around at the docks and somebody had passed by and he'd said, "Oh, right, yeah, there's an idea."
Yeah,
you know, it's getting you part of the story going, plus part of Miller's story going, Miller's internal story.
Yeah, and also, I suppose. I mean, Miller kind of was going there for an explicit purpose of finding out about the Nauvoo. So, which is kind of a salvation. It just wasn't this, like, in the terms of, like, maybe his salvation might come because he feels conflicted because, or not necessarily conflicted, but he feels like he might want to resolve the mess that he's made, right? Because on one hand, like, you know, he shot Dresden, unarmed prisoner, but also, you know, bad dude, the belters support him and think he did the right thing, but there are other people who he respects that think he did very much the wrong thing. And there's some sort of reconciliation I think he wants to get out of this. And he's trying to marry up these two competing...
Well, this is where thoughts, his right? two worlds were, isn't it? When he had a job as a policeman. He was a policeman for an Earth corporation basically, whilst he was living among his own people, and he was, you know, Wilwalla. You know, I think that's what it is. It's a continuation of all that into this, and he's got, so he's, as you say, the builders all think he's a hero, and they're all looking up to him ever more than ever now, and you know, and Diego obviously likes him a lot. You know, he sort of sees him in a different light, and obviously we're talking about that scene. Diego,
like he's clearly a kind of father figure or whatever to Diego. Diego basically adopts him.
Yes, it's like reverse. Diego
just wants a father figure because, like, he sort of like, you know, when he's running for the Griegers, like, you know, that sort of feels like he's a bit lost there because you don't tend to run in a gang unless, you know,
you want to belong to something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and then he's with his uncle Mateo, and then his uncle Mateo, you know, rightly or wrongly, sort of discards him.
Well, no, he justifies it and chooses to view it in a certain way himself, because Diego, in the other previous episode, talks about the love that his uncle had for him, that he sent him out and you know, to protect. He was saving him. Maybe, with a bit of risk, but not as much risk as flying into an enemy ship.
But he still, Uncle Mateo still, removes himself as a sort of guiding figure, like, you know, like Diego would probably go with his uncle Mateo because he needs some maybe structure in his life or some guidance or something. And then where does he go from there? Well, like, you know, probably the OPA. That does sort of sound.
That's what happens.
That's the logical next step. And then you know,
well, it's a story of wanting to belong and being radicalized. That's what it is.
And poor Diego. He's a good lad. Like, he's, you know, he's just a bit.
He's a teenager.
He's led by
whatever he heard last and fires him up. That's what he's led by at the moment. I've got a bit of that in me. I'm very easily persuadable.
No, you're not.
You're right.
And like, you can tell that like he's got the very, like, I mean, he is very teenager because he listened to the loud music and he's got the pictures of
posters
on the walls and everything. Like, that's, you know, he's full blown, you know, late teens teenager. And
There's a bit where I think it's when Naomi's talking to Miller, and Diego passes by and it has an exchange with Miller, and Miller's like, you know, you've never slept with anybody, can't you? Like, essentially, like, and Diogo's, I can't remember the exact words, but he's like, I crush ass to dust. And it's
just... Well, also when he's in the bar and the woman tries it on with the barman. Barwoman, she sort of pulls out a taser and goes, he goes, you'll need that for your heart after a night with Diego.
and she goes, like, it's time to go home. And he goes, okay, where'd you live?
Actually, interestingly enough, at the beginning of the episode, Fred Johnson, I was going to say Brian Johnson again, Fred Johnson actually refers to Diego by name. Which I don't know. I kind of feel that's a little bit like, I don't know why that stood out to me, because it's like Fred Johnson, really important guy, to be honest. And it's like he knows poor, you know, Diego. Just like,
well, he's one of 25 people that went on a very dangerous mission for them. So I'm sure he learned a few of their names.
Well, one of 50. Let's, you know, not forget the fallen.
Well, 25 that came back.
I get the impression, like, Fred cares about his people. Genuinely care about his people and the people that are, you know. I mean, we get that. Can't remember what episode whether it's recent or actually, is it coming up? It's when they attack the space station, and Fred's like, that was the old trick, getting them to volunteer. Like, he cares.
Making them think it was their decision. He doesn't mention that.
And it seems like, I don't know, it's like, Diego seems to be given, you know, like, he seems to be responsible, like, he was the one that took the scientist away from the thing. And now, I think you could possibly, I don't know if I'm overthinking this, it might just be that, like, that's the only guy who Miller knew by name. So
trusted.
or trusted, or yeah, like, because yeah, I mean, any of the Black Sky OPA, they probably would have just, you know, double tap, you know. So at least,
apart from the boss, who's already been put in an airlock.
Yeah. I still reserve that holding the meeting right outside the airlock was either planned or like heavily anticipated.
Maybe anticipated, I think, is probably right. Yeah, just in case.
Yeah. He's like, you know, because Fred Johnson is like,
who's Brian Johnson?
The singer from AC/DC.
AC/DC. Oh, yeah. Right.
The one that replaced
Black.
Angus, yeah, that one. The one Young, that replaced. Yeah. No, he replaced Bon Scott.
Oh, that's it.
Angus Young is the guitarist. Anyway, let's not get into that too much. We're getting all day talking about it.
Let's see. I don't know what that is. Oh, right. Okay, suits. What was kind of interesting is that at the beginning where they're Holden and is obviously like super pissed off with Miller.
Yes.
Right. Now, Naomi sort of, I don't know if she understands or even agrees, or
she seems to sort of with at who? Least Naomi and Miller.
We agrees with who?
Miller.
I think she. I think she understands both sides.
I think she understands both sides.
What Naomi's often in, I think. I think she sees both sides of it.
And Amos is like, oh, well, you know, he killed your girl, you killed him. That's, you know,
he. Oh, I love this. This is the Amos line when they're in the bar where he says, actually, I wrote it down. That's, and he means this, he's not saying this as a joke or as like a sarcastic. He says, the captain gets a little jumpy when you kill people without talking it over first.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just means that straight.
Yeah, like, that's it.
A little bit of advice for you, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Hmm. Yeah.
But why is it picking up
calling him the captain, and he is, he is acknowledging his position. Mm. So I don't know when that happened, though, because it's. Was it the attack on the station?
I think it's when he felt betrayed by Naomi and he turned to Holden a little bit for moral guidance.
You reckon so, yeah.
Yeah. But I did notice in the last episode when there was that breach in the thruster that Naomi was like, don't go down, Amos, it's dangerous for you. And Holden was like, look, I mean, we fucking need that thruster. Or is it Alex that says that? I don't know. I think it's Holden that says that.
Yeah, it's Amos.
And Amos is like, he basically goes against what Naomi's saying.
Then later on, when they're going to do the high EG maneuver, it's Naomi that's like, you can't do that, it will kill Amos, and Holden has to make the decision, no, we've got to do that.
And I think
another reason why Amos respects Holden, I think, is the thing in the airlock where Holden had the gun to Amos's head. When push comes to shove, Holden will stand up to him and telling him he's doing something wrong, which is something that he needs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, even if he didn't agree with him, and he wouldn't have given a shit at the time.
Yeah.
He was like, well, if that's what you got to do, that's, you know. Yeah, he probably mulled it over afterwards and thought, yeah, that's, I can respect that, yeah.
Yeah. Also, interesting that I noticed that Naomi sort of dwells on this a fair bit. I think she mentions it at least two times in this episode.
What was this far off killing her?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you can see the angle is not an awful lot off being straight at her, just from the hole, you know.
So
you see it go through the ship.
So she's, that's part of her reckoning journey.
Also the recognition that, like, Alex is a good pilot, but there was a lot of fucking luck. Like, you know, a couple of bullets gone, you know, a couple of inches one way or the other, and they're all dead.
Well, yeah, because Kamina mentions that. Also, if that had been a few one inch to the left or one inch over or something, your ship would have melted, your engines would have melted.
She's like laughing about it in that belter kind of Viking-y, pirate-y way.
Yeah,
Alex's face is just like...
But she's like, look at all the men. Oh, look at how lucky you were there.
Yeah.
Kamina seems to be very happy about the whole thing. I think she's just...
I love
Kamina's great. She's a great character.
Another character that hasn't quite come into her own, but like, I mean, she's not like Bobby. She doesn't hugely develop. She's the same character all the way through, but yeah, the more
she gets more story parts and stuff.
Yeah, she's so cool.
She's already a complete person.
Mm. No, yeah, this show is so good after just a couple of scenes with somebody, and you're like, I get them. Yeah,
but it's not just the writing; it's the actors as well.
Yeah,
they pick the actors for, you know, like I say, they had two really good actors that could have played Amos. And I think they chose the right one of the two, you know?
And with Kamina Drummer, the Kara Gee, is it?
Kara Gee, yeah.
Kara Gee. Yeah, I've seen her interviewed in a couple of things, and she is the fucking polar opposite of that character. Like, that is not just somebody playing somebody who's kind of a version of themselves. She's kind of quiet and, like, demure and, like, quiet-spoken.
Yeah, she's a model and everything, yeah.
Almost comes across as shy, and, like, and then she's, like, Kamina just yelling at people and, you know.
That is acting. Right. Have we explored all of the? Oh, and also one thing about the ship where they're doing the post mortem is that it sort of recognizes that Ross Nanty is a little bit particularly good, I guess is the right word I'm using, because don't they say they talk about how. If it was basically most other ships, it would have been cut in two or something.
Yeah.
I mean, Martian military, so it's top end. Yeah. Stealth ships aside, this is the cutting edge of, whatever.
Yeah. So
I love when Kamina says, when she realizes that, like, her laughing at how close they all came to death, like, and she realizes it's upsetting them a little bit, she goes, like, don't worry, we'll take care of her, like, one of our own. And I love that. That's just really...
Yeah, cool. And she talks... Yeah, but yeah, right. I mean, we were talking about where were they going to get supplies and stuff, and it's like...
Yeah.
Tycho looking after them. So I don't know if they manufacture ammunition or not, but can't remember really.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know if it does. Is it special ammunition or is it just...
Well, it's an engineering platform though, so presumably they can
make it, yeah.
Make it, yeah. Having panels that they'll replace panels on the ship and everything. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, as far as it's just bullets. It's just big bullets. Like, it's not anything...
Yeah, they're not magic bullets or tech bullets or anything. Yeah.
No, just big bullets.
Yeah,
so it's just high caliber munitions.
Yeah,
so, large caliber munitions. Sorry.
Yeah, so maybe it's like the Nintendo screwdriver, where it's like a special shape. Is that the Nintendo screwdriver?
They use a tri-wing screwdriver. Yeah.
Is that a proprietary Nintendo thing, or is that just a weird screwdriver?
Just to make it awkward, isn't it?
It is weird, but I don't know if it was Nintendo that used it first or not, because there's a lot of things like that. You got a system called Torx, T-O-R-X as well, which is like a sort of star shape, but then you've got Security Torx, which is a star shape with a dimple in it. You know, there are a lot of, and then you've got the one that's like a two, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a screwdriver that's been split in two. And they only fit a certain way, and so yeah, there's all sorts of different. I mean, I've got them all because I used to do all the repairs and computers and stuff. Nintendo stuff as well.
I don't like Allen keys. It's too easy to shear stuff.
Yeah, especially with cheap Allen keys.
Mm. Is it worth? I don't know if I know enough, do enough of to warrant splashing out. But
well, it's not so much the cheap. Sorry, it's not the Allen keys themselves that are cheap. It's the bolts that are cheap.
Oh, the bolts. And the bolts. Are cheap.
Yeah.
If that's soft metal, you're fucked.
Yeah, it's cheap soft metal, and a lot of stuff is made like DIY flat pack furniture is terrible for that. You put it together once, and then if you need to move it or take it apart to get it out a door or something, you can be scuppered completely.
I mean, I've got a few pieces of furniture I'm thinking about, like, adding extra supports on it, because after a while it has that horrible wobbly thing where it's like,
need triangles for strength on structure.
Chipboard attached, and chipboard is very what's the opposite of dense? Very rare.
Soft or
the screw into chipboard is just if you wobble it, it's going to wobble forever. Like, there's no,
so I might
araldite in there and put the screw back in, but you better just get in better furniture.
I mean, I obviously, you don't want to throw out something that I think I can repair it with some scrap wood, and make it good again. You know, maybe it struts or even just securing some of the right angles or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, that bothered me. Not, I needed to know the
the opposite of dense is rare, but that would be more. Yeah, you think of a gap?
No, I wouldn't say that. Well, you've got things like dispersed, porous, but porous is that's further. It's not as far as that, is it? Loosened,
undense. That's not undense, a word. Indense, dedense.
Somebody mentioned on Ferdy the other day that it's something I've realized before, but like in English, we don't have, so we have the word short to mean the opposite of tall and the opposite of long, whereas other languages have specific words for those two, which is interesting.
Oh, right, like unshort and unlong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
flimsy, I mean, I suppose is.
Flimsy or.
Nebulous. Weak. I love that word. That's a good word. Nebulous.
Flaky.
Yeah.
unstrong. I know. Okay. God, we need to bring.
Sparse is kind of the opposite of dense in a way as well. But,
yeah, sparse.
But it's still not quite, you know.
It's not
pliable.
Exact,
but... Pliable, maybe.
Yeah.
Yielding is another one.
Yielding.
Yielding's got the sort of, what do you call it?
Sexual kind of.
Yeah, Mills and Boone type feel to it.
Yielding chipboard. are you trying to cut out a glory hole or something?
Wiggle that screw enough.
Goodness me.
You've got a very uncomfortable.
That escalated quickly.
Anyway, is there any scenes that we've not covered yet?
We've jumped
around a lot in this one, though. It's a lot of small pieces, isn't it, this whole episode? It's not really got a few longer. What about Earth and Mars?
It's a very yielding episode.
I got to be honest, at this stage in the Mars storyline, I find it a little bit tedious, but not...
I knew you would. Watching the Mars scenes in this episode and probably the next one, because I'm mixing them up. Yeah, it's not your kind of stuff, but I'll give you, it's going somewhere more interesting.
Yeah, I'm assuming
definitely.
That.
Like, oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I just remembered where it's going. Yeah.
A little bit of a bait and switch, like with Miller becoming a Mormon. It's a little bit that. It's not quite.
Yeah, you get the feeling it's all gung-ho, soldiery stuff, but more of it. I mean...
Also specifically with... Actually, I can't remember which episode that. But the tension between the one from Earth and the rest of the Martians that's
resolved. That's kind of resolved itself now. Yeah, this episode.
There's a reason for that as well.
So we mentioned that already. He was born on Earth but grew up on Mars. Sort of.
He's an immigrant.
But yeah. There's a payoff to that. Is what I mean.
Oh right, yeah, and so but also he's a sergeant and he hit a private. So
she's a sergeant.
Oh, she's a sergeant.
She's a sergeant. She hit the private.
Which is like the leader of the squad. Oh,
yeah, that's a captain.
No.
Oh, hang on a minute. No. Okay. Yeah.
They're not.
There's four Marines. There's a gunnery sergeant who's Bobby.
Okay.
I think one of them's a corporal and two of them are privates. I think.
Yeah. That sounds
about
that. Yeah.
But they're basically low level.
Okay. All right. Cool. So
But they do get their orders. And we know where they're going.
Yeah.
So by the end of the episode... Chains. Pardon?
To protect supply chains.
But do you know, do you remember where they're going? Geographically speaking?
Is it the belt?
No, it's it is, but it's Ganymede.
Ganymede Station. That's, is that one of the moons of Saturn stations?
It's the moon of Saturn, yeah. It's food. It's domes that make the agricultural domes and stuff.
Okay. Ah, right.
That's why Bobby's pit. She wants the war, and she's like, "We're on farm patrol."
Yeah, that's what she says. Yeah, we're on farm patrol.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does kind of. I mean, I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, but it's like.
Oh, that was weird.
Oh, there's two.
Wow.
Hey, my.
Two. Hey, my. Yeah, I got kicked off there. Sorry.
Do we need to rearrange?
They are the best trained. They're, well, not the best trained, but they are, you know, an elite.
Once that disappears, it should work out. Yeah, but yeah. we might have to rearrange. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they are okay. Sure, they're elite, right? But protecting food chains from, like, is that not super important?
It's not something that you
it's
would
not
assume.
Glamorous.
But I'm yeah. So why? So are they go? Is it
U.S. Marines, which I assume the Marines in this are modeled on, rather than the Royal Marines? They're more like the British paras. They're the ones when you send in to get shit done quickly without worrying about
them. Drew, you got a refresh first, and then I got a refresh after you.
Why has Drew got a refresh?
Oh, is he the?
It's just you that needs to refresh, Chris, and then that'll put Drew in the middle.
Oh.
Thank fuck he's gone.
Yeah. Jeez, he's back.
Am I back? So, but are we in the right order?
You're in the right place, yeah.
Okay, good.
I was just going to discuss some HR matters, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, so I mean, these Marines are like, they're the sort of elite super troops, basically.
So, hang on. So what happens, is Ganymede, is that the one that has been striked? Is that being...
No, not as far as we know, nothing's happened.
Yeah, nothing's happened in Ganymede, no. It's further out.
Is something going to happen? Well, I mean, answer that.
Presumably.
Yeah, it's, you know, if the story is they go out there and come back and nothing happens.
I mean, the last place we knew she was sent was they were heading to Phoebe, but then Phoebe got blown up. So.
Yeah.
Oh, so. that was, I knew there was something to mention about that. Right. There was something to do with Mars. In this episode, they mentioned that it was Martian personnel on Phoebe.
They do, yeah. They do.
So it's an Earth protector or whatever, the Phoebe itself. Mm. It's a private corporation, Protogen, who have the station, but it's Martian scientists who are in the place. Yeah. So. Yeah, I just because I remember we were talking about this and there was a lot of confusion as to whether it was Earth or Mars or whatever, but it's a bit of everything, really.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. Well, corporations operate relatively internationally in today's world.
Yeah.
So it kind of there's no reason why an Earth company would not employ it, whoever is the best for the job type of thing, right? Like,
also, they mention the scientist, the survivor scientist mentions. Cotier, something his name is, I think.
Sounds
I'll look
right.
it up.
Was that
a mate?
Is that Spy?
No. They've got similar names, actually. It's the You're right. The Spy is called Cotier Ghazi, Ghazi. Oh, yeah. But the other guy, the surviving scientist guy, he's he mentions that they withdrew the surviving scientists, or whatever he says, and they split them into two different ships because of
contamination
fears. Sorry, there was a big boing just then.
Oh, was that me?
I don't know, one of you hit the mic stand, yeah, because I've not moved, so for once it wasn't me.
But, lack of professionality on this podcast, I'm just...
It's shocking. Eating our dinner and... Podcast. Yeah, it's terrible. So he mentions that the smoking jacket. You got a cravat on? No, no, that's just your pajamas.
Oh, no.
What have you got under the robe, actually?
Yeah, just
hey, whoa,
just a
steady. It's not that kind of podcast.
Lovely, lovely color combo, though.
Yeah, I quite like it. Okay, you did sort of come back quite well. Yeah.
No, so he mentions that they evacuate the Martian scientists. They kill everybody else that's there.
Mm.
And then they split them into two teams. And then Holden says to him that, because of fears of contamination, he says, well, yeah, you were right to fear it because, you know, the Anubis does have it.
I love that throughout that conversation, like, Holden is angry with this dude and hates him. And, like, the dude can't see that.
Yeah,
he's unaware of that. Just... And Amos is the one coaching Holden, like, yeah, no, shut up. Talk about this.
It's like he likens it to a paedophile or something, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about directly about, oh god, it's not very pleasant to even think about. But if you talk about sex with kids or whatever, it's not the same. But if you show them a picture of a kid and you know you're getting inside his head, you're in his interest space or whatever he called it. But that's what it is, because Amos does that. He holds up the communicator with the pictures that are coming out of Eros, and it's like the people that are suffering and everything. And he's like, "Oh, that's interesting," you know.
Yeah.
So he keeps them on the line. So that was the international symbol for fishing.
We do see a little. Oh, hello.
I think somebody's jamming our transmissions.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the Martians.
Yeah.
Right. What do you mean it's the Martians? He is a Martian.
Take that back.
Oh, hang on a minute. You're the OPA. I'm the. It's not me. It's the Black Sky faction. I blame them. So, I you mentioned like a little bit of like sexual tension with Naomi and.
I said it was a sort of sapphic feel to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was very. You remember, you know, the bit in Top Gun with the beach volleyball with the glistening young men and everything. It was very much like that.
I rewatched Top Gun recently, and I'd not watched it since I was a kid. I didn't realize quite how homoerotic that film is.
Like it's Tom Cruise thing. I mean, the whole Tom Cruise thing is.
Beyond like it's greased up men with their tops off 90% of the time, and then the beach volley and lots of close ups of rippling bodies, and it's so
that was a thing in that time in the '80s. Because if you ever watch me and a bunch of mates from school went to see one of the Rambo movies. I think we were far too young actually.
Yeah.
I think it was the second one. It might have been First Blood, and there's like a whole scene of like you know Sly Stallone's rippling stomach muscles and arms and all that, you know, and it's like. Yeah. Okay. Do you like films about gladiators? You know, you ever seen any
films? I do. I really do. They're definitely getting their lesbo on.
This felt like, even though there was nothing here, right? I'm assuming Spy and Avicerella are generally like very professional. Maybe platonic.
Oh yeah,
friends.
This was quite important as well. This tiny little scene. Yeah.
Yeah. This little scene. I don't know. I kind of felt a little bit like
he did care. Context, he seems to care.
There's context that will be revealed. I don't mean make sense. Like you're misunderstanding it, but it will fall into place.
Okay, because it does feel like a little bit of Spy on the Side there, you know. But like,
I think it's somewhere between like almost mother son, but with some sexual stuff in there as well.
Yeah, like a bit of like you know a little flirty or something. You
like
know?
I say, wait till Amos meets Avicerella.
That's great. Yeah.
So basically, secure line to Fred Johnson.
And he's kind of saying, "Are you really sure you want to do this?"
Yeah. I love that. I'm sure this is what you're referring to, but I love that he stays in the room. He's like, you know, she's like, you can get out. You don't need to be, you know. And they say the hung separately and hung apart thing, which I think is a American revolutionary thing. But the fact that he stays in the room and he's 100% on board with her is lovely.
Yeah. He obviously cares about her professional life as much as anything. Cortazar is the name of the scientist that survived.
Very simple.
Yeah. So, but also, like, I like that he outlines the fact that, like, even though we can make things secure, the OPA, right? Like, they're a bit chaotic.
They're like leaky as a, I can't remember the metaphor.
Sieve. Leak like a sieve. It's like, I can totally get that. Like, you're, you know, so.
Yeah, once you've sent your reply, you might be given something away.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't.
I fucking adore when Fred Johnson receives the message and Kamina goes, "Do you think this is for real?" And he just goes, "Yes." Again, it's another moment where, like, but his political instincts—he's just like, "Yes," just straight up, no question.
And her reaction to the information that he sent—I need to watch it back and have a good look at it again because I don't think she explains what it is yet. But she's—I can't remember what she says. She's like, "Holy shit," or whatever.
It's the stealth ship. It's the position of the stealth ship.
That's right. It's the position of the stealth ship.
Okay, because like I think part of it is it's look like, you know, I have straight up been lying about you for political reasons.
Oh, you're in the wrong places again. Man. I just realized because Drew rejoined.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah, he's fucked off now. We'll get peace now. We'll get peace. Yeah, oh.
Okay, fine.
He's back again. So,
there we go.
Yeah.
Human herpes.
So, yeah, he hangs around. As you say, it's like hung together sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, he's top bodyguard, right? So, you know, spy bodyguard.
I'm not sure how he comes into it. I think it's just. We just see him suddenly being there after she says she needs somebody. Yeah, yeah.
No, he gets to see a meeting between she and he, and she says he says all I do is industrial espionage now, and she's like, yeah, fucking bullshit. I know you've got a Robin Hood complex. You know you're doing like he's clearly a good guy. He cares about people, and that's why she chooses him.
All right, okay. I must have missed
It's almost like she's signaling she's going to turn coat and basically wants people loyal to her.
This is it. She's looking for her own loyal people, yeah.
During their first meeting, he asks, who are we against? And she says, Erin Wright. So he knows, immediately.
Yeah.
There's clearly a trust between them two that we don't know the reason for yet, but we'll, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she's planning to presumably take down Erin Wright with the, or not, maybe not, I don't know, but just she's trying to stop the war or stop a war.
That's a priority, yeah, yeah.
So she's not just like taking down Erin Wright, but
she realizes Erin Wright is complicit in this. I don't think her priority is taking him down. If that's a consequence, fine, but her priority, like if she averts the war and he remains in place, I don't think that would bother her a huge amount.
No, they seem to get on quite personally. Like,
well, Erin Wright, I think it's been said at this point, Erin Wright is kind of her protege. She trained him.
I thought Erin Wright was her superior.
Her son.
He is, but she trained him. He's her protege.
Cotillard knew her son. He was an old friend of her late son when he was in the military at the same time. That's how he knows Alicerella. That's why you've got that sort of father, mother, son connection.
The implication all the way through is that Avicerella could be the Secretary General, like quite easily. She could be the Secretary General, but
she's pulling the strings from a more comfortable position. I think is a way.
She'd rather operate from the shadows and have more power, basically.
Well,
in America, better to be Secretary if you want to actually affect. Sorry. If you want to actually affect the world, like, better to be Secretary of State than President, really.
Yeah. I always think it'd be kind of amusing if he's like, look, help me. And he was just like, ain't fucking having it. Mm-hmm. Sends back a picture of just like him doing double encrypted. Ding!
The belters actually have like a version of that, don't they? Like it's, I can't remember. It's like some hand sign.
Yeah,
that
they cross a finger over or something.
That reminds me, when belters are drinking, they're like their cheers is yamsein, which I interpret as being like a further corrupted version of you know what I'm saying, like namsein.
Oh, okay.
Well, they've got stuff that seems like almost like English and other stuff that's Hindi.
Yeah, I think it's French. Like,
French. No, like it's I think I think it's Mauritian Creole. But that I think borrows quite heavily from Hindi, so it's
So it's a well this evolution of that then.
In Mauritius you got a blend of African, French colonial and Hindi cultures, and it kind of
there's also a lot of there's a lot of Indians, as in Indians from India in the Caribbean during colonization. They were called Kuchis. A lot of indentured Indians, especially women who were escaping from arranged marriages. Mm.
But the reason I always kind of assumed that like Creole features very heavily in the Beltaloda sort of like world. Or they borrow. They seem to borrow a lot from Creole. Is because Creole itself is like it's a mix of a whole bunch of different like languages, and it's built up in a very similar way to how it was for belters, and the link to sort of colonialism and how cultures just change as a result of it and all that kind of, it feels very poetic, I guess, in that kind of. I don't know if it is Mauritian, particularly Mauritian Creole, but that's.
I don't know if it's specifically Mauritian, but I think it gets bits and bobs from all over the place, which is why it feels legit. Like they don't go to the point of making an entire like conlang out of it, which is, I think, cool. I think that can be a rabbit hole, but yeah, there's enough that it feels, to me, it reads as, real, plausible.
Plausible evolution of language.
I mean, if you do have a whole bunch of random cultures put together and then something arises out of it, it will, like, to imagine it would be something similar to Creole would be the logical assumption to make.
Yeah.
Unless. And also it does sort of like make a degree of poetic sense that it's history not repeating itself, but well.
Rhyming. So, quick aside on the Martian Marine squad. Mm-hmm. The lady with the blonde hair is a private. The guy from Earth is a private. The other guy is a corporal, and obviously Bobby's the gunnery sergeant. There you go.
Right.
I love Bobby. Is it okay to just say I love Bobby every time Bobby's mentioned? Because that's going to happen.
Yeah, sure.
I would have thought the rich girl would have been the Sarge.
In a modern professional military, like that, like the money will get you so far, but they still want the best people. It's still going to,
Yeah, I mean, they are an elite unit as well.
And it's not like gunnery sergeant isn't like officer class. Like if you go,
it's an NCO. There's no officers in that squad.
No.
They're an NCO, it's a non commissioned. Yeah. They are still, they work for a living, as they say. Sorry, anything else about Abba Sarala then?
So the position of which stealth ship has...
The one that was at the ring where the scientists were, where they went in and
the one that they disabled.
Okay, all right. That's manned, right?
Possibly not anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was knocked out completely.
I mean, presumably there were survivors and presumably the belters would have taken them somewhere, but we don't see any of them.
Because the belters do talk about having quite a few prisoners. They have a few prisoners that they take around with them. They couldn't have all been security guards.
Yeah.
They mopped up some people somewhere.
Yeah. I assume there were more on the station. I mean, that was a big station.
Yeah, but that was the point, is that they were expecting much heavier resistance, but they found out that it was just this...
It was minimally... I think earlier on as well, they mentioned, like the ring is spinning, so there's somebody home, but it seems to be, like, minimally staffed.
Yeah.
So that must be, like... There must be huge stretches of that thing that are just empty and barren.
Mm.
Maybe they're all shut off and stuff.
Well, I don't get the impression that ring was a huge facility.
Big, but not huge. I mean, we're not talking. I mean, like, compared to Tycho, it'd be like next to nothing,
Yeah, it's not like it's like a very large building as opposed to like it's not a city or even a town. It's a large
office building sort of thing.
Yeah,
like a big office building with only one floor really being.
in a ring shape.
I used to work in a bigger building before it was sold off.
Space station.
I
thought you were going to say space station.
Oh, no. And it was a big old mansion. And it, because it was a newspaper thing. And in the olden days, it would have printing on the bottom floor and all that kind of stuff. And then over the years, as various jobs get outsourced, the accounting department gets centralized at the head office, all that kind of stuff. It just ended up us being a couple of journalists and sales staff just on the ground floor. And it was just like, and the whole rooms were just like, we had rooms upon room floors at our disposal. And it's kind of like a bit eerie. And then like there were several buildings that happened to, some of which were a lot bigger. And you had like four story buildings where only the bottom floor was ever being used. And you just had like, and they just kept junk, kept piling up in there. It's kind of amazing. But there were ghost stories there as well. But yeah, no, I, 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 The Mars stuff, yeah, like it's
The important thing is about the Mars stuff is, yeah, there's a bit of tension amongst them because they're like on edge and they're, you know, they're itching for battle or whatever. But the important stuff is what happens between, and to my mind anyway, I'm not spoiler or anything. I'm just saying, to my mind, the important things are her relationship with the commander of the ship, her boss basically, and his attitude to the mission is much more pragmatic and stuff. It's like we go where we're needed, sort of thing.
It's the Expanse writing and acting. Like, you know, in so little dialogue, we get that Bobby is both frustrated by and respectful of her CO. Mm.
I did find it a little bit amusing that, like, when in doubt or when she needs to, like. She goes, "Who are we fighting for?" It's like, oh, fucking hell, Bobby, come on. No,
that's a Marine thing. I mean, it's an Army thing. The Marines, the US Marines are like, they have, you know, the oorah chanting, all that stuff.
God, but I could not do that.
A little bit of an echo of, you know when Miller and Amos square up and, you know, Miller punches Amos, barely feels it, but Amos floors him. We get a little bit of an echo with that, with Bobby and the...
He hits her by accident and she just loses her shit and goes right,
and she just fucking floors him.
But is Bobby Martian?
Full Martian, yeah.
So what about the Earth lad? Is he
from Mars? He was born on Earth but he grew up on Mars.
Yeah.
So they're all biologically Martian.
They're all But also, they mention in, it's either the last episode or this episode where they mention it, that the Marines, the Martian Marines, train in 1G.
This episode, yeah.
So they are used to, because they're training to fight on Earth, possibly.
I also love that in one of the exchanges where there's tension between all of Bobby's crew, I think it's the blonde lass. She says to the dude born on it, or she says about him, like, his bones are all wrong from growing up in like on gravity. Like, is like from their perspective, like Earthers are wrong. They're built wrong.
Yeah,
and they talk about having dust in their bodies and all that stuff.
Also, one thing I did find, actually going back to the Naboo, that's the bit that for some reason my brain, because I kind of find that kind of fascinating. Is with the Naboo, they are kind of, I don't know, it's not the right word to say terraforming, but they are developing a natural environment inside the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like kind of what Mars always wanted to do, but they're going to have a lot more trouble doing it on a planet. Mars could.
Well, they live in domes at the moment, so they probably have similar things going on. Engineering wise, it's probably domes with, you know, imported soil or whatever, or created soil from other things or whatever they do.
But it does seem to me that like it would just be easier to start it from scratch.
How do you mean?
Rather than
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Like to build. So to do what they're doing on the Naboo. It, as in, like, build a satellite, a planet, a space station.
Oh, I'd say that's kind of what they're doing with the domes. The domes are that.
Yeah.
The real difference, the difficulty with Mars, aside from the difficulties of terraforming compared to something like the, it's a scale thing. I mean, the surface of Mars is billions, I would imagine, of times greater than, it's a scale thing rather than at that point, it's a scale thing.
Yeah, but you could build up and out and out and out and out.
No,
yeah, but
it's built on the inside. It's got to be on the inside because of the centrifugal thing. Once they start spinning,
no, I think Chris means on Mars at the moment, right?
No. I just mean
on a station.
On a station, yeah. Like, I mean,
the way the Naboo is built is it's the gardens things, the farms and whatever, on the inside of a ring.
Yeah.
So they can't build.
I mean, I'm not necessarily saying they should do it exactly the same as the Naboo. They could probably work.
That is the domes. They are. I mean, there's no point building something, like, it would be harder to build something in space and do that than to just do it on a dome on a planet.
Yeah, because Mars has gravity.
Yeah. It's got gravity. It's got a kind of soil that you can probably cultivate into a fertile.
It's rock, but you could.
Basically, all you've got to do is build a greenhouse.
Yeah.
Sort out the air supply and then. sort out the soil, as opposed to the problem of, that, like, terraforming, you've got to deal with the atmosphere as a whole, which that's the problem, really.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I question whether or not it's easier to do it on a planet than on a space station. Maybe I'm wrong or whatever. I don't know.
The problem is you've got to build the space station, whereas on, you know, you just skip that step if you're starting on a planet.
Yeah, all you need to do is enrich or import the soil, have it inside a dome.
You've got to do everything you would need to do for a dome, plus build the space station and get everything up there.
And if you want it to be, you know, things to grow and work like that, you need to have it spinning around as well.
Yeah.
So once they go off on their journey, the ship will be spinning. So they'll start it off spinning and then send it off, you know? So they've probably got thrusters on the outside of the...
It's about half. Mars gravity is about half ours.
Half G.
Mars gravity. About a tenth as thick, I think.
Oh, there's a whole...
More yielding.
There's a whole Wikipedia page. 38%
of Earth gravity.
Yeah,
it's pretty low because it's quite a bit smaller and slightly less dense.
Hmm. What would the word for less dense be in this regard?
yielding,
of course. Yes.
Sparse, or
it's just less dense, I think.
Yeah. That's... So yeah, we're going to joyride the Naboo in the next episode. Looking forward to that. I hope it's the next episode. It might not be.
Might take some build up,
but I would like to see them at least, you know, I don't know, get the Mormons out. Oh, I've got to do the climate control systems again.
I will, without saying specifics. Like, you will be satisfied by the next episode.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so. Cause,
the next two episodes are going to satisfy you a lot.
Oh, the next two episodes are fucking amazing. Not you saying that, like...
Great. The next episode's great. But it is. It's the show that makes you want to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You never watch an episode... I've never watched an episode of The Expanse and kind of went, I might watch the next one or I might not. It's always been like, what's next?
Sometimes it's a bit of a cliffhanger, like that. You know, this episode's a cliff. You really want to see what happens with the Naboo. But it's not always that. It's just character stuff and where are they going?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm also looking for. I want to see what is on Eros. I want to like. I got to be honest. I wouldn't have killed Dresden out of the same morbid curiosity. Like, I want to know, right? Like, I'm not saying I would do what Dresden does, but I wouldn't, like, you know, I wouldn't have shot. Well, I mean, yeah, this is the whole Lebedev thing in Deus Ex, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
although you kind of like, now, you don't like shooting Lebedev, do you, Drew?
Hang on, what's he doing?
He's the unarmed prisoner on the jet.
Only because I don't know what he's... You know way more about, like, Deus Ex and who's doing what, and, like, the only reason I don't shoot him is because I'm not entirely clear on what he's up to.
I don't know how much we know about Lebedev, but it could very easily be the case that he... What's his accent? Is it a Russian accent that he's got?
It's a Slavic name, at least.
Is he a oligarch? Because he can have a jet. He can afford a jet, a private jet.
Which side is he on?
The NSF.
And they're kind of okay.
All
the factions of Thingy.
Nobody's perfect.
The
they're
the south of the north, if you ask me.
The south of the north.
The south. Yeehaw! You know, the south. Yeah. Come again.
You mean.
Rise again.
They're libertarian because it's from America, but I think in outside, if this had been a European game, they'd be anarchists.
But they're funded. They're
against the Grey Death. They're for distributing the
ambrosia
the common people. Ambrosia, yeah. And that's enough to get me on board, at least to not see them as enemies.
But the thing is, it's like, well, look, they're funded. They could be funded by a Russian oligarch and in association with an Illuminati-backed French terrorist group.
Yeah, see, that's the stuff I don't know.
Hamish?
The guy in the fridge.
The guy in the fridge, exactly. It all funnels down from the... So, look, they might be well-intentioned people, but they are being very heavily manipulated.
The argument I make about UNATCO troops, and you are against killing them.
I'm against killing UNATCO and NSF troops.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Anyway, we're have we got anything else to say about the Expanse? Because we're running quite a bit longer than our target.
Oh, is it really? I think we're done, aren't we?
I've said everything.
I can't think of if there's anything else. Hang on, I'm going to have a quick look at the synopsis again, just to see if we've covered everything. So Ross and Andy comes back.
Oh, there's a bit that is not super important, but I made a note of it when I think Naomi says. Holden saying he shot an unarmed man, and Naomi goes, he shot an unarmed mass murderer, and that's the difference in spec.
Yeah. See, this is the thing, is like, well, would you have shot fucking Butcher of Anderson Station?
Well, it's no, I think it's more it's more like Mendeley, the you know, the Nazi scientist.
Mengele.
And you know, medical science learned a lot from that. I think that is arguable, but let's pretend that they did. You know, is that okay? But is that, and it's like, no, that is not okay. Shoot the fucker.
Can't we just like put him in a prison? Like, why does it have to be shooting all the time?
In a war, yeah, I'm against shooting people post facto. But in you know, if you're storming that place where he did that and you find him, like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, like the people that liberated the concentration camps. If they found any guards, those guards weren't getting out of there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't blame it. And like, is on the list of if we're organising atrocities, right? Like, you know, it's an interesting start. It's like when they shot Osama bin Laden, right? Like,
I think they just made a martyr of him personally.
Yeah, it's like, look. There are people
that's complicated because they also created Osama bin Laden.
CIA made him.
When they executed Saddam Hussein, I was against that. Just put him in prison. We shouldn't execute people. The state should not execute people. In the heat of the moment, in the heat of emotion, in the heat of battle, when somebody's actually evil, then, I mean, I'm morally, no, we shouldn't kill in that situation. Mm. But if it were me, probably would.
John Hinckley is making YouTube videos with country music. Sorry, I said this every episode.
You're talking about this a lot at the moment. Do you have a thing for John Hinckley?
Well, going
back to Mengele, he was torturing people to death.
Mm.
Many, you know, huge numbers of people. He was like putting them through
experiments and better commas, you know.
In terms of like, yeah, like there are people like no one's going to be staying awake crying for this guy, right? Like, but it's not I'm not even necessarily saying they don't deserve it. Mm. I'm just sort of saying it shouldn't. You don't know if it should or shouldn't be done until after the fact, right? Like, well,
you'll never know that
because it's not like a utilitarian thing for me. It's about it's about good and evil. It's about emotions. It's about in that moment, justice. When we're dealing with pure, if we caught Hitler in the bunker, like, and I was, you know, like, shoot, you know, knowing what he did, shoot the fucker. On a very basic, but I don't think it's harming. I don't think harming somebody is ever morally right, but in the moment, it's sometimes understandable and.
Oh, understandable for sure, and yeah, like I say, like bigger tragedies happen every day.
Without being right, the language fails at this point, but
yeah. Well, I mean, right and wrong are human constructs anyway, right?
I don't know. I agree that.
Oh, you're Catholic.
But I agree. An objective. I agree. Some things are objectively good and bad.
I forgot his bloody name now. We were talking about
science, man.
Dresden. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So yeah. Well, I think what we were talking about is kind of go around a little bit of a circle, but the episode explores all that.
Yeah.
Between Naomi's attitude, Holden's attitude, Miller's attitude, Fred's attitude, they've all, although they're on a side of, you shouldn't have done it, you should have done it, or you shouldn't have done it, or they don't care, you know. There is still nuance as to why each of them has their opinion that they've got, and it's like just what we're talking about.
This might be a stretch, but do you think, like, even his name, like, he's like, Dresden was an allied atrocity in World War II.
I wonder about that,
You know, is he intentionally named with that in mind? Like,
I did think that, to be honest. I wasn't.
Feels a bit of a stretch, but could be.
All it says in the Wikipedia is it could indicate that his ancestors came from Saxony. That's where Dresden is.
Okay.
All Germans are evil.
I mean, everyone seems to be named after everything in this, doesn't it? Like, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if some of them are just
Ganymede. Well, no, I mean, that's just real life, isn't it?
Yeah, Ganymede's called Ganymede. Eros is called Eros. Ceres is called Ceres. Earth's called Earth.
One of those that time made a little bit unfortunate with the Epstein drive.
Yeah. Think Brian Epstein. That's a bit more.
Unless anybody's got any more notes.
No, I think we should call it quits there and move on with the rest of our evening off camera. Right, well, thank you very much. I think it was a weird one there. We jumped straight to, when Chris jumped straight to the end of the episode. It's like, but that shows that you've got, yeah, no, the discussion at the end was all about the thing that happened at the end of the last one. Interesting. But it shows that the, the hook is there every time you watch an episode. The hook's there for the next one, isn't it? And it's not cheap. You know, it's like, this is interesting. You know, that was, you know. Anyway, let's call it a night on that though for now. So we've got a video that's under 2 hours.
Nice.
Thank you, chaps, once again. It was jolly fun. And we'll be on to episode 4 next. Was that 3? That 3 or
3? Yeah.
That's 3
already. 3 static.
Yeah. So I'll be uploading that sometime soon.
Hooray.
Which means nothing when you're already watching the video. You're watching something that I've uploaded in the past.
You'll be able to watch it right now.
In the future. You've...
Hello, French Ghosty.
He doesn't watch this. It's the only one he doesn't watch. I think we need to Francify it a bit to appeal to the French.
We're talking about French. French is Creole, weren't we?
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
All right. Bonne chance.